Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
10 minutes after 9 o'clock on this 10th day of November, 2025. Hi, everybody. I'm Andy Griffin. Bill Hoster is in the house with me today.
Good morning.
Hi, Bill. How are you, man?
I am fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here. I was thinking about names. Okay, as you can guess, my name's Andy Griffin. I've been teased my whole life with the Andy Griffin Show, Barney, Aunt B, Opie, all that stuff, right? How many times have you had to tell people it's Hoster, not Hoster?
Oh, I think endless.
Yeah, endless. First time someone meets you, H-O, okay, Hoster.
Every time.
So I don't know, is that the way your name's always been? It's always been Hoster?
I did it. You know, it's actually German, Austrian. Okay. It came over and it was A-R, Hoster.
Really? Hoster, okay.
And, you know, the Ellis Island legibility there.
They spelled it wrong.
Yeah. There we have it.
That's interesting. I remember years ago I was doing a football game on the radio, and I did the game, and we talked and did the game. And then about middle of the third quarter, a lady comes up to the press box. And, you know, we got the headphones on. We're busy doing stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And the lady, somebody lets her in, and she comes over and taps me on the shoulder. And I'm live on the air. I almost broke my microphone there. I'm live on the air, and so I can't really talk to her. But we finally go to commercial break, and I take my headphones on, and I'm like, hey, can I help you? She goes, yeah, it's Smythe. I'm like, what? She goes, you've been saying my son's name wrong the whole time. I'm like... You know, and I forget his first name. Last name was Smith.
Yeah.
Now everybody in the world says Smith, right? Smith. Yeah. And like I said, I don't remember the kid's first name, but the lady's like, it's Smythe, not Smith. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Okay. Sweetest sound everybody is their name.
I was going to say, at that point, I was like, you know what? It's their name. They can say it however they want it. And, you know, if it's pronounced differently, then it's spelled, then maybe you let someone know, but nobody let us know. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, it's their name. They can say, I could say Griffin, right? Instead of Griffin.
Griffin.
there was another game. I was doing a ball game, and Dixie College was playing Eastern Arizona, which is right down on the Mexican border. Everybody on their team except one guy was Hispanic, was Latino. Mm-hmm. The one guy... name was Benjamin Griffin, and I just remember thinking to myself, they were up here, so we had our home announcers up, but I remember thinking, probably at their game, they probably have a Hispanic announcer, and, you know, they have names like Sepulveda and Martinez and Garcia, and I'm like, imagine this kid comes to the plate, all right, now batting Benjamin Griffin, you know, I don't know, I was speculating, but the only white guy on the team could be.
Anyway. That just made my Monday.
Bill.
That's great.
Bill Hoster is here. He is for about, what do we got, seven weeks
month
left?
Month and a half here.
He's mayor of Leeds.
And, yeah.
Your time as mayor, do you feel satisfied that you got done what you wanted to get done at this point?
You know, I chose not to run again for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. The biggest was personal. I mean, it's 30 plus hours a week of pulling away from.
And for how much money, Bill?
Yeah. Nothing but arrows. But yeah, it's a lot of time pulled and dedication. In fact, today will be spent the remainder of my day on this. And you know, and it's a big distraction. There were kind of, you know, a lot of things that happened before I ever became mayor, mm-hmm. that came to fruition while I was mayor. And I'm glad I was there to navigate and manage it. I mean, we had a huge, huge development that was zoned before I ever came in. But it had been finally bought by developers who had money to do it. And so they start turning dirt and people start freaking out. And,
right. And blaming you, which you had nothing to do with it.
You know, the power that these people think I have, it amazes
me
that I can just wave a wand and violate people's constitutional rights and property rights, or fix whatever's their ailment between the neighbors. But, yeah, no, the mayor is really just supposed to set the agenda, manage the meetings, and try to serve the town. And when, you know, these large developments come in. Fortunately, we did have a good conversation. We were able to reduce the number of doors by 25%, and we brought in a low-impact hotel that'll help the tax base enormously. So in the long term, it reduces our tax liability for the citizens. I don't think we're going to have to raise property taxes if all of that stays. I'm not sure it will now, but, you know, we did a lot of things. So to answer your question, I think, yes, I had no idea of the things that were going to come when I ran, and it was a lot, you know, of what Southern Utah has faced a lot of, water challenges, growth, and all of these things. So being able to sit at the table and have those dialogues to where it kind of meets what the people who are already there are hoping to get, and right. and the ones who are wanting to come are going to get, and trying to help mediate something that's somewhat of a win-win while respecting property rights and keeping government as small as possible.
Now, you're semi-retired. What did you, remind us again what you did during the course of your working career?
Well, yeah, so prior I was a firefighter and a paramedic for a long time, and then I invented a couple products, started getting into medical distribution, owned a couple medical distribution companies, wow. And then manufacturing companies. I still own one that's a hardware, software, and medicine for fire and EMS right now. And that's, I'm fortunate that my business partner handles a lot of the day-to-day, but there is a lot that has to be involved. I have to be involved with there. And so those things are pulling. It's not just something that, you know, I show up at 8 a.m. and leave at 5. As an entrepreneur, you're always working, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Unless you want to fail, and then you're not working at all.
That's it, right? So, there.
Did that prepare you, do you think, that kind of career for being a mayor for a while? Or did, I mean, obviously there's some skills you were able to transfer over, right?
You know, the challenges that I faced, a lot of my interactions were with government contracts, understanding Safe Harbor, understanding Sunshine Act and grandma requests and all of those functions. So understanding the legalities of functioning with government, but it also was experiences working for a Fortune 10 company in how HR works and how hiring and firing and all of these things are associated. A lot of them don't apply to government. So it was really interesting how I leaned on our legal counsel a lot to guide us and me through how do we do this? How do we manage that? It's a lot different in the private sector than it is in government.
Definitely. And there's a lot more money for the public than there is for the private.
That too.
Yeah.
That too.
So you also have part of your what you're doing now is you're the what's the title of the Hurricane Valley Fire?
Chair.
You're the chair.
Yeah.
And I would think the career you just talked about, all the medical devices plus being a paramedic and firefighter, that definitely prepared you for this.
Yeah. Yeah. That role, the county commissioners assign those chair seats, and then the board elects a chair, and that was me that they elected. So it was a tumultuous time. The prior administration handed us a 92% tax increase.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And I think it was within a couple months that we ended up going into public hearing and getting just filleted. None of us wanted it, by the way. So we voted it down, but then had to go to work and really lean in. And we got a new chief. Chief Joe Decker was fantastic to work with and identified areas we could cut, things we could do. And that kind of led us down the pathway of writing legislation with Representative Elison and Senator Darren Owens to hopefully, at the time we were thinking, reduce the property tax burden that there hadn't been taxes for over a decade, I think 13 years, and try to sustain a good fire and EMS organization that would protect life, liberty, and property.
Yeah, and again, a lot of people, I mean, we've talked about it in the past, when you have an emergency, you don't care about property tax. You don't care about sales tax. All you care about is how soon can someone be here to help save me or my loved one's life. That's really what matters.
And seconds matter.
Yeah, second. Yeah, you're right. You know, and a response of 3 to 7 minutes is way different than a response of 23 to 27 minutes.
Well, and that's also something that a lot of people don't realize is that amount of time. It matters at the emergency, but it also matters monthly to you and your insurance. Right. So there's this ISO rating, which is an insurance rating that all of our houses get. And depending on how quick your fire department can respond and how close they are, how well trained they are, how many people they have, depends on your home and the amount you pay every month. So we were able to reduce that significantly with sustaining the appropriate amount of response and training and everything in our fire department, as well as reduce the taxes.
It's crazy to think about it, but yeah, the insurance company wants to know, because if it matters if a fire truck is there in 12 minutes or in 5 minutes, the insurance company is going to go, look, your fire truck isn't going to be there for 12 or 15 minutes. We don't want to, you know, you're going to have to pay more.
Yeah. It costs them.
So yeah, totally.
And they're a cabal. I mean, they can stack this how they want, right?
Yeah.
All of Washington counties landed in this critical fire zone, and some people are losing their insurance, having it doubled.
Yeah.
It's been a crisis, and we're trying to handle it at the legislative level right now, but that's what happened in Palisades in California, where the legislature tried to put a cap on the insurance companies, and the insurance company said, well, we'll leave. And that's what happened. A lot of people were left without insurance. Yeah.
And then, of course, we had the fire up Pine Valley this year that I think a lot of people found some things out about insurance at that point, you know. Mm-hmm. You pay insurance and you think everything's covered, right? And then there's, you know, they have things, something called the Act of God, you know, where there's certain things aren't covered. And
force mark.
Yeah, or if you're in a flood zone versus non-flood, things like that. And it's crazy. All right, talking a little bit about, first of all, Hurricane Valley Fire Department, fire
district.
District, there we go. Covers what?
So we cover 7 municipalities, and I'd forget them if I tried to name them. Wonderful representatives from each one of them that we all sit on the board. We're
pretty much east side of the county, right?
Yeah, all of Hurricane City and Springdale and Leeds and Tocqueville and all of them. And it's a large, large service area.
Geographically huge, yeah.
Yes. And I don't think we've got more than 50,000 people, you know, that are being served, but we got 5.5 million tourists that come through.
Right.
And so, you know, it was the brainchild of our fire chief to modify an existing law that facilitated rural health care. And so we took that, worked with Representative Elison, Senator Owens, and created a new sales tax that would help fund fire and EMS with certain qualifiers. And we got that passed, and it was really a nothing burger, because all it said was, yeah, you can put it on the ballot. Well, when we started looking at it, we realized it was going to be taxation without representation to a lot of citizens, because some areas wanted the full 1% and some didn't want any, and those who didn't want any were going to have the one, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So we went back in 2 years to try and fight for this, and I was many times going back and forth from the Capitol here with other representatives around the area, and to get this across the border. The governor had a special session this last time, and through begging and pleading with even our Senator Ibsen, Senator Vickers helped us. We had Senator Owens really hitting it hard, and Representative Elison, all of them just really pushing to help us get this across. And we've, by miracle, I suppose, and some texting, but I got the governor to get us on, and or we all got the governor to get us on. We went up there, and it almost passed unanimously. It was like a 90%. Got it through, and that was Senate Bill 1005, which we just had our public hearing here at the fire district. We're moving forward with that sales tax now. We're able to implement it and start to roll back the property taxes now, which it's historical. You don't see politicians lowering taxes, and that's what we were able to do, and I'm proud of that.
The old saying is, once a government raises taxes or creates a department, they're never going back, that is no longer needed or whatever. So,
yeah.
All right. So, to summarize, basically, bottom line of this is sales tax, getting that money from all those tourists that come to town, mm-hmm. is going to fund not all of it, but most of the fire and rescue.
Correct. Yeah. So I just read an article this morning about Weber County's proposal for a 22% property tax increase and how much their the cost to their citizens for what they have going on. And it was interesting to read, because it's a lot of what we're going through. I'm grateful for the creativity and the dedication that happened on this and trying to leverage the 5.5 million people who come through, and they're spending money in restaurants, and they're buying different things, and they're also using a third of our call volume and not having to pay for any of it. Well, now they will. They'll help support the ongoing of the fire district, and we're not going to have to raise taxes, you know, which I think is just, that's a win.
These people, these tourists come, and they want to spend money. They do spend money. They buy stuff, and they have money that they want to take advantage of the hotels and of the restaurants and of the, you know, the retail, the shops and things, and of course the parks that we offer. And it's a no-brainer to say, well, if they're going to use our stuff, shouldn't they help pay for our stuff? And yet that really hasn't been the case in a lot of places, has it, Bill?
No. There's a couple areas where, you know, they were able to do some of that. I'm trying to think, over by Moab, they used some of it. But for the most part, and you know, the benefit too, Andy, is that this bill that we got across the finish line is going to be exercised in other areas of the state. I've talked with other fire chiefs now who are really excited that they can lift the burden from the property tax or tax base and put it onto sales tax, which in a lot of areas, Texas, Florida, a lot of places, Nevada, use that to help fund these things.
Do you know if I went to a restaurant and spent $100, do you know, is there a number yet that we know how much they would pay more in taxes to help support this?
Yeah, it can be up to 1% more.
Okay.
So
$1, or actually, $100? Yeah, $1.
Yeah, that would be on the ballot. Anything over 0.33 would have to go to vote, but up to 0.33 we can implement without going out to on the ballot.
We're talking with Bill Hauser, Leeds mayor for another 6 or 7 weeks, and then he steps down. You know, Bill and I were talking off the air before we went on about the way political office, the way political being outspoken has become a target from the people on the left. They, if you don't have an opinion they like, I mean, there's unfortunately we have the Charlie Kirk example, but not just the Charlie Kirk thing. They have no problem with maybe violently and certainly you know, in public online, they'll flambé you, for lack of a better word. That's tough, Bill. And I see it as a conservative talk show host, but I'm not a political officer. I'm not in public office. And I just think, man, why would anybody want to do that? And sadly, you even received some death threats.
Yeah, I did have one. You know, public service shouldn't be target practice.
No, not at all.
And, you know, we just saw a large shakeup in the elected officials, the incumbents.
A lot of them.
Across the state of Utah. Yeah. I mean, we saw Provo mayor got ousted, and St. George, Hurricane, Tocqueville. I think the mayor of Orem as well.
You know, generally, something has to happen for, like, a scandal or something, but that didn't happen this time.
You know, I've got my opinions. And I think
I love your opinions.
Yeah, you know, I've got my opinion. I think for the most part, it's human nature that if we have things really good, we come up with problems. We kind of invent them.
You're right.
And I think we really had a solid win this last presidential election. We had a very solid win.
Yeah.
And we're continuing to win and win and win and win. Things, you know, aren't perfect, and we go through some bumps along the way to fix all of the chaos that was delivered to us over the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Fixing our borders wasn't easy. Fixing the tariffs wasn't easy, you know, and the budget, all of these things. So, and, you know, now we're starting to get momentum back on getting the government back open. I prefer it just stayed closed, you know, but nonetheless, you know, I mean, a lot of people do rely on this that need it. There's a lot of abusers, though, and a lot of this got exposed, but these things had to happen. So my point being back is that, you know, we've had things really good. People want to create a problem to fix. But, you know, there's also kind of a vector that occurred here, which was a lot of growth in Utah. Utah's experienced a ton all along the Wasatch Front and in southern Utah of growth. And it's not just, you know, your average stuff. It's people who are coming in with from blue states, bringing their ideologies with them. Right. And I do see a lot of that happening, as well as people who are coming in, and the ones here want to shut the door behind them. And so it creates conflict. And when you don't have an elected official trying to break the rules or waving their magic wand that doesn't exist, why, let's get rid of them and get someone who will.
Hmm. I had lunch with a guy and his wife. My wife and I had lunch with them on Friday, and they are working Southern Californians.
Yeah.
They've lived here for a few
now,
years.
Now, are they refugees or are they?
Well, I was just going to say these were the right kinds of Southern Californians, because they left California because the political climate had become unbearable.
Yeah.
And as beautiful as the geographic features are, the geologic features are in the state of California, they couldn't take it anymore. And, you know, these are epic times MAGA type people that I had to get out of California.
My team. No, I love them. And unfortunately, though, there are some who don't, you know, have that, and they bring their politics with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's amazing how grassroots can move things, but if that grassroots is fed with the wrong information, it can be toxic today. And like you were mentioning earlier, the way it can just explode on social media and hit people, it can affect things.
Yeah. All right. Let's get a weather break in here on the Andy Griffin Show. I will give away right now two $10 gift cards to Angelica's Mexican Grill. If you text me, 435-467-5842, text Angel. I'll take texter number four. In the honor of Bill Hoster's 4 years as mayor.
I love it. Thanks.
We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
In my haste to get a drink before we came back, I hit my microphone and knocked it off again, and that's the way things go. Anyway, we do have a winner on our Angelica's. I'm waiting for a name back, though. They're going to text me their name, and I highly recommend the sweet pork. You go to Angelica's, you got to try the sweet pork at least once. You'll be like, whoa, this is good. It's kind of like some kind of addictive something or other in there. I don't know what they do, but anyway, thanks for tuning in to the Andy Griffin Show. Bill Hoster is with me today. I did not call him Hoster, even though he gets called that all the time, I'm sure.
Occasionally.
Kind of like hostess or hostess. Yeah.
Day's learning.
All right, let's talk about Prop 4 a little bit. Maybe tell me how Proposition 4, well, what it is, and then how you fit into this whole deal.
Okay, so it's been in the news quite a bit lately that a Supreme Court judge from the state of Utah ruled that, I think she's a Supreme Court justice, I'm not sure. She ruled that the Prop 4 and associated activities before that were supposed to be enacted in, and Prop 4, by the way, let's just dial it back. So Prop 4 was a people's initiative to redistrict the state congressional lines, and it gave criteria and required a committee to do it. And the thing is that good ideas, depending on which side, you know, you're on and what you want or not. But our state constitution does not read that way. And the state constitution says the legislature will draw those lines. Now, people say gerrymandering and
you hear that a lot.
Yeah, and they get mad, you know. Well, the reality is that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled gerrymandering very legal. And it's been going on for a very long time. The problem is you can't do it on race. That's the ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And so, but you can rule it or draw lines on political parties and incomes and things like that. So that's been going on a long time. Our state legislature, you know, every 2 or 4 years, you get to reelect new people in there. And so it truly is the voice of the people. But to have a people's initiative go in and overwrite the state constitution with that, wasn't right. There was an initiative that was done and it was pulled off the ballot. I didn't like the way it was written either, but it was trying to circumvent the Prop 4. And so in sum, what's happened, and you've seen it in the news a little bit lately, where a challenge to that is happening right now. And I'm a part of that. Rob Axon, Attorney General Derrick Brown, there's a handful of us that have gotten involved and said, well, we're going to do a new initiative. And we're going to try to push back on this, and we're also going to try to get a repeal. And I think this is all using constitutional law. This is all using everything appropriately to try and say, hey, look, let's stick with our constitution. Let's allow the legislature to do their job and not have an unelected committee come in and decide what is going to be best without ramifications. They can do what they want. There's no consequences.
It has really bothered me in recent times. We see again and again lately judges, appointed judges, as you mentioned, not elected, but appointed judges, kind of trying to create laws. Well, I mean, you go back to high school civics class, right? You got the legislature creates the laws. The judges interpret the law that has been created. They don't create the law, you know, and it's really bothered me. And I'm guessing that's kind of part of what's behind what you're talking about, is these judges thinking that they have the right and power to create the laws, and they don't.
We see it a lot, especially lately, overreach of judges. Now, I'll admit, in looking at what this judge did, I can see some. You know, some of the logic to it and things that are there. So our effort is to comply with the current laws that we have. And what we're saying is, okay, you know, you set the rules and we're going to push back on this using those rules. And
right. So
we're collecting the signatures now. We are required to hold 7 public hearings. We're doing 14 of them. I've got another one tonight. I just did one last week in Hurricane at the community center. I've got another one that I'll be conducting up at Parowan. That one will be tonight at 6:00. And, you know, all of these are an effort to go over and above, make sure that we're doing everything by the book and try to defend our U.S. or our state constitution.
While you're in Parowan, by the way, look up Cade Boardman for some barbecue. I'm just saying.
There's no Angelicas up there, so no, I'm going to be having to find someplace.
High voltage, pretty good stuff. Anyway, okay, so you said you have 14 public hearings. Where are you at? How far are you into that?
So they're all over the state. Each one of us that are on the suit, there's 11 of us, I think, are conducting the public hearings.
So are we halfway through them or about halfway?
Yeah. Okay. After this one, I think we're there. And so, you know, these public hearings are just that. They're a public hearing for people to get their voice out and be heard. The first one I had went, I think, pretty well. But a lot of people come to them thinking that this is a jury trial, that they're coming in there and they're going to change people's minds. You're not. You're not changing anybody's mind. I know that. But I love those who I've seen come in and learn. They'll listen to the other party. And I think that is the best thing about democracy, Andy. And I actually brought up the fact that, you know, someone was actually murdered for having dialogue and doing that between people who disagreed. And when we stop conversation, that's when we have a problem. And so I'm grateful for the public hearing process. I'm grateful that we get an opportunity to vocalize our differences. But we need to do it in a civil manner. And I hope that continues. I hope we can continue to have a civil society and not the hate and vitriol that we've seen lately.
Way too much of that lately. You're right. And the political violence. It was so strange to me after the whole Charlie Kirk thing. Maybe 2 weeks afterward, there was a poll done by, I think it was Deseret News Hinckley Institute.
Okay.
It said 17% of those that consider themselves quote unquote very liberal thought political violence was justified in most cases. 17%. What is that? One in six?
Almost one in, yeah.
Yeah, almost one in five. And it's like, wait, no, it's no, no. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And I'm seeing more of it, you know, on social media. I'm seeing people actually, they don't get the support that they're looking for, so they'll make up stuff to add into the flavor that's not true. And we saw that with Charlie Kirk. We've seen it with local politicians. We've seen it all the way throughout. And when, you know, sometimes you're handcuffed, right, as a politician. You can say certain things. You can't say certain things. And that's so frustrating. You want to set the record straight, and you can't at the moment. You look like you're just defending yourself or you're setting up more problems down the road. But, you know, when all of this gets momentum and you start to see the people get riled up and they dig their heels in even deeper when they realize they might be wrong, then we end up with big problems. And so I'm hopeful that, you know, again, people start to realize there's three sides to every story and start to realize it's his, hers, and the truth. And somewhere in between, you know, you're going to rest and try to get as much information about all of these things as you can. And I hope people do that, especially on this next movement. We really do not want an unelected committee drawing our lines. This is not just a Utah issue, my friends. This is something across the country. They have outside money that has come in to try and make Prop 4 happen because it gives the Democrats another seat in the House for the U.S. Congress. And so they spotted Utah. We've got some people who are standing up. We're pushing back against it, and we're not going to let it happen easily. And I'm hopeful that we're successful.
Have you ever had someone, you're playing a game with someone, and they fail in some way, and they go, well, actually, this rule has changed because it's my game, and I'm going to change the rules. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to
they're moving the goalposts. You're right.
The game. Yeah. By the way, text real quick. When you're in Parowan, you should look up Alma Richards, a great story about an Olympian.
So, yeah. Well, I know about that.
I think, isn't there a movie out about that right now on Angel Studios? Did a movie
I love
about
Angel.
I think they did. So,
yeah, I love Angel Studios.
Got to get a commercial break in. More with Bill Hauser, and we'll get his opinion on a couple of national issues when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 9:51, only about 8 or 9 minutes left in the show. Bill Hauser is with me today. Bill and I have become friends over the
good friends.
4 years that he's been, when did I have you on? Did I have you on right after you became mayor?
Real close.
First time, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been a good solid four.
Yeah, appreciate you, man.
Appreciate you, brother.
A lot of fun getting to know you and become friends with you. And Bill and I both like firearms.
A lot.
And one of these days we'll have to go out shooting. Mm-hmm. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I found out, so I took a class with my wife because she had never shot before. Mm. And it was a, you know, self-defense shooting type class.
Sure.
And I found out she's actually a really good shot if you don't have to hurry.
Okay.
Now, they always say in shooting, you trade off speed versus accuracy, right?
Yeah.
And she was a perfect example of that. If she had to shoot fast, she's not a good shot. But if she had time to take her time and measure it out and eyeball it, she was actually a very good shot.
That's why we have shotguns.
So, yeah, it's true. Yeah. And I actually I am more accurate if kind of draw and fire.
Okay.
I trace that back to maybe growing up playing, you know, cops and robbers and all that stuff when I was a kid. I for whatever reason, I'm better firing that way. So
I learned a lot of unique talents when I was in the Navy learning to, and I got expert marksmen on both.
Nice.
It's different techniques that I had no idea about. It's not stuff you learn when you're hunting and that. Hmm.
I found out when I was a young man, I was actually better at archery than I was at rifle shooting. I got my, archery merit badge. You have to earn something called the blue bead before you can get the merit badge.
I remember those, yeah.
I just absolutely loved archery shooting. So,
yeah.
But it's been a while. So, Bill, a couple comments if you don't mind on national government stuff. First of all, the government shut down, the SNAP benefits, and exposing some people that probably shouldn't have even been on SNAP, but also the other repercussions of TSI and the air traffic controllers and stuff. Yes, do you have any thoughts on all that? How much time do we have, right?
I don't know how deep to get into this, but the reality is that I think these situations expose a lot, but it's very uncomfortable for the people who really need it, and my heart aches for them.
You're right.
I can tell you that people in my town are trying to take care of our own, just within our own little community and through our religious organizations and that, because there are people who rely on these things who rightfully need them. But when you see entire grocery store prices drop because the government subsidies of SNAP were funding a majority of those increases, you have to wonder, how deep was this? And so I don't know. Again, there's three sides to every story. What I do look at is the facts that we're seeing, and hopefully no one gets really hurt. People aren't hungry in our country, but there is a reset that has to happen.
I feel like, and I've been actually criticized for this a little bit, but I always felt like programs like SNAP and other, even the church welfare programs, they should be temporary fixes. They should be, and I know there are people that have permanent problems, but there should be every effort made by the individual to go, okay, I need this, but I don't need this forever. I need this to help me get back on my feet.
Well, the big one that's got everyone up on their heels is Obamacare.
Yeah.
And
the Affordable Care Act.
The reimbursement change that is really a pivot of all of this that's going on. In my personal opinion, I don't mind sharing it, man. That was the biggest scam that was concocted and perpetuated by the Democrats ever on the middle class to enrich a handful of insurance companies that were able to demolish and crush their competition with the help of the federal government.
Yeah.
And now they have no competition. And if you look at how their stock has gone up and the values of those companies ever since, it's astronomical. Some are 300-500% increases. And who's paying for it? All of us. And now we've got people who are dependent on that are going to be without the ability to get health insurance. And so we've created a huge problem when government steps into areas they should never be in.
Agreed. And now that I get near retirement, Bill, and you're mostly there, healthcare is such a big thing. Like,
always.
How am I going to pay for all that, especially where I'm not yet old enough for Social Security yet?
It's a travesty to consider. A lot of entrepreneurs relied on that. You don't have group health plans, and so there was a good pathway that was there. It was just abused. And what we're seeing is a Congress that's pushing back on it, a Senate that's pushing back on it, a president that's pushing back on it. And I think those are good things. But in the mix, we do end up with, some dolphins caught in the tuna net, if you will. And it's a hard thing to, see. And so I'm hopeful that we can mitigate the friendly fire. That does catch some people, but that whole thing has been a disaster that I'm hopeful we can get correction on. The healthcare in this country has plummeted over the last decade, and we're seeing far better numbers of outcomes and treatments, even in Mexico,
Tijuana,
it's all financially driven. Unfortunately, we saw the pharma companies, focused more on things that they shouldn't have been focused on, and manipulating the billions of dollars that go into lobbying with our Congress and Senate. And this has just got to stop. And I'm hopeful that we get actual true health care in America back.
As we, my wife and I considered our health care options as we near retirement, it was like, well, the Affordable Care. My wife asked me about that. She's like, Obama, the Affordable Care Act. I said, that was such a scam, and it was so harmful to our country that we are – even as we have people now trying to fix it, like President Trump, there is, it's so involved. I mean, recovering from that is, we got some major growing pains to just get out of it.
Oh, it was beautiful when it first started, right? I mean, gosh, hey, a couple $100, you got life, you got health insurance for your entire family. Yeah. And then it just keep creeping. And it kept to the point to where now I think most people are going to be double, at least on their, their premiums. And I think the estimate is about a third of all income is going toward paying for health insurance now for a family. That is incredibly insane and a market that was completely created by our federal government.
And heaven forbid, should you have to use it, because
it's even worse.
A whole bunch more money.
It's even worse. So, yeah, I'm hopeful that we do start to see a correction, that the free market can make the impacts that need to happen here. But it's not going to be an overnight thing. Again, it's going to be painful, like you just said, to try and make the correction. And I hate to see anybody get caught in the crossfire. I'm hopeful that that doesn't happen, but something needs to occur.
1 minute left, Bill. Anything you wanted to touch on before we let you go?
No. I'm sad to be kind of stepping away from public service in a small town, but it's not the end. I think there'll be, we'll make some announcements next year.
I was going to say, Bill's not going to make an announcement today, but he's not going away forever.
Right.
So thank you, Bill, for coming on today and spending some time with us.
My pleasure, my friend.
Not only representing Leeds well, but also representing yourself and the conservative values that you bring. I mean, it's honestly, you're right. There are three sides to every story. Their side, our side, and somewhere hopefully closer to us is the truth.
But
that's the honest truth right there. So,
well, I've loved having you here and being a voice of Southern Utah, my friend. Thank you, Bill.
All right, we're out of time, folks. Thanks for listening today. We've got lots more planned for you the rest of this week, and then I'm going to be leaving for a while. Not forever, but for a while. Talk to you later.